Jen, are you ready? Ready?
Ready as I'm going to be, I guess. As ready as I'm going to be.
Okay.
Try to keep awake.
Okay. We're ready. The Senate Education Committee will come to order. Welcome, everyone, and we are going to discuss reports, rules, and mandates, what should be eliminated. We have several speakers that will address us, and in the next few weeks, we will have a specific hearing on some legislation. I know that one bill has been introduced, and there's a couple of others that are being prepared, and that'll be the time where we process suggestions today as well as other ideas. I believe we have Chaz Anderson and Tom Melcher from the department that will first address us. Then we'll ask Karen Ballmer, John Tyne, and Grace Schwab to come up together, and anyone else that would like to, after that presentation, to also be a part of the input for the committee. And for committee members, we do have the calendar, and if there's questions, let us know. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Chaz Anderson. I'm the Deputy Education Commissioner at the Department of Education. We'll be quite brief. First, I just wanted to give a general overview on what we do to review rules and statutes at the department. With regard to rules, we tend not to review our rules, especially as it relates to federal law, until federal legislation is reauthorized, because it doesn't make sense for us to revise rules until we see the reauthorization and what the new requirements are coming from the federal government. So, for instance, this morning in the Finance Committee, I talked about the special education law being reauthorized in late 2004. We just received regulations from the federal government this fall. We're engaging stakeholders and looking at revising the rules. And then once we have worked with our stakeholders, we will submit revisions to that rule. And that's generally the process we take for rule revisions as it relates to federal law. As it relates to state law or state statutes or rules in terms of repealing mandates, we review that as part of our biennial budget process. And when we prepare the department bill and the governor's budget, we take a look at statutes and rules that relates to state law that should be changed or repealed. We have a few of those that we've submitted as part of our budget proposal. We haven't quite gotten to that point in the budget committee, but we are recommending changes to our career and technical education rule, and we're also recommending reinstating a rule for the graduation test, that a similar rule that we had in place for the basic skills test. As it relates to the department policy bill, Dr. Melcher will talk about some of the mandates, one of the mandates we're proposing to repeal, and also some obsolete account finance reserve accounts we're proposing to also eliminate, and that's part of our proposal to the legislature to repeal mandates in rules or statutes. So, Dr. Melcher, if you wouldn't mind reviewing those.
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and members, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. And I believe there are some excerpts from the department policy bill in the members' packets. I think the first page just has Article 2, Education Excellence, and it has a Section 5, which actually goes on to the second page. And you'll see that the department is proposing to repeal a portion of Minnesota Statutes 123B-143, which requires the superintendents by January 10th each year to submit a report to the commissioner describing the expenditures that the district believes it requires to reach an 80% student passage rate on the basic standards test taken in the eighth grade. This report has been around for a number of years. Our experience with it is that the with the repeal of the basic standards test, that, and also with other developments that have occurred in terms of ways of estimating the cost of providing an adequate education with the governor's study and so forth, that this report is no longer needed. We've had a number of concerns raised by school district superintendents over the years. The school district business managers have also included this in their recommendations as an item to be repealed. We've had a great deal of difficulty getting information back from the school districts on this report. When this was first done many years ago, we had pretty much complete response from the districts. This last couple of years, the numbers of districts that have been responding has gone down, especially since the basic standards test is repealed, and this gets to be kind of a theoretical exercise. What would it cost if we still had the basic standards test? This year, we actually have had 142 districts completing the report and 190 that have not completed the report. We send out reminders, but it's just becoming to the point where it's just not a reliable indicator of what the cost would be, and we don't have the right target in terms of the kind of test that we use. So the department is recommending that that report be repealed. Another area, it's in Article 5 of the department policy bill, would be to eliminate obsolete reserve accounts. There are a number of reserve accounts that are still carried on the books of school districts, but the revenue source that drives those has gone away a number of years ago, and those include a separate reserve account for bus purchases, a reserve account for parental involvement, one for bus safety, one for graduation standards staff development, and one for a special revenue we had for a few years for class size reduction, all day K, and special education. So all of those are accounts that are no longer needed, and we're recommending that the statutory requirement to maintain those be repealed. Again, this is included in the school district business manager's platform as well.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Olsen.
Mr. Chair, I would just want to thank you for that language to repeal that. As a former school board member, it was kind of like this is an impossible number to figure out anyhow, so it just seems like a good thing to clean up the law with. And if you can find a bunch more of them, I think the local boards would be appreciative of that.
Thank you. We've felt that the number was not a reliable number. It's just a bottom-line estimate from the district with no documentation, and we've long been concerned that we didn't have a uniform methodology being applied by school districts, and so, again, we think it's kind of effort that could be better spent on other things.
Mr. Chair, if I can just add one point. A couple weeks ago, I spoke to the business managers and gave them an overview of the governor's budget and included this provision in our policy bill, and I actually got a round of applause.
I bet.
So one of the few times I think we've ever gotten a round of applause during the governor's budget presentation. So I know that it has pretty wide support among business managers and administrators.
Thank you. Further questions? And are there any other recommendations you may have on this subject as we put together a bill?
Mr. Chair, I know a number of organizations are going to probably present their recommendations. We've had discussions, I know at least with the Board of Teaching on their recommendations, and we support the Board of Teaching's recommendations are coming forward, and we're certainly willing to take a look at additional ideas if people have them. But at this point, this is what we've included in the governor's budget and the department policy bill.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yep.
Next, we'll ask Karen Ballmer, John Tyne, and Grace Schwab to join us at the table. And welcome, Ms. Ballmer.
Thank you.
And please proceed.
Thank you. And I do have a handout for members.
Okay. Yes. It'll be distributed, but you may proceed,
okay,
Ms. Ballmer.
You. Thank you. My name is Karen Ballmer, and Mr. Chair and members, it's a privilege to be here before you today.
Excuse me, a little bit closer to the mic.
Oh, certainly.
Thank you.
My name is Karen Ballmer. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Board of Teaching. Thank you for this opportunity. I wanted to come before you today with the idea of a repeal of a statute, and it's Minnesota Statute 124D.62, and you'll see it on your handout. It's printed out there for you when you receive that. And I want to preface my comments today with starting sort of at the foundational level for the Board of Teaching. The mission of the Board of Teaching is that we would maintain high licensure standards and also provide flexibility in licensure. And that's a pretty fine balance to strike. We do want to ensure that to the extent possible, all of our Minnesota students are taught by fully licensed teachers. However, we do recognize that this is not always possible, that we do need to provide flexibility. And to that end, the Board of Teaching has a number of what we call special permissions that school districts can apply for through the Board of Teaching in instances where they cannot find a fully licensed teacher for a class or a subject area. So we have a number of those already in place, and I want to be sure that that's clear, because the intent here with my suggestion today is certainly not to decrease the level of flexibility that we have out there for local school districts, particularly in a shortage area, which the commissioner exemption in Minnesota Statute 124D.62 reflects. Specifically, the commissioner exemption is a permission that is granted through the Department of Education rather than through the Board of Teaching, and it was targeted for teachers of English as a second language or bicultural bilingual classes, and we know that those are shortage areas. So as I said, I want to highlight my comments with the fact that this is in no way intended to decrease the level of flexibility that local school districts have. However, we do have other mechanisms in place. We've got something called a community expert permission that school districts can seek. That is in situations where a school district simply cannot find a fully licensed teacher to provide instruction for a particular course or class. And so they could hire, with the board's approval, an individual who does not have a teaching degree but might have expertise in that particular subject matter. We've got other special permissions, variances, waivers, temporary limited licenses, non-renewable licenses, and so on. There are several. And so we believe that, in effect, we would hold these folks harmless because there are other mechanisms in place, and that this is simply not necessary. And I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Ms. Ballmer.
Questions?
Senator Olson. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure if you're the appropriate person to ask, but there are obviously some history here. And was this put in place before the Board of Teaching came into being, or was there some sense that there needed to be another backstop or another option other than the Board of Teaching in order to provide some of that flexibility?
Mr. Chair, Senator, I don't know the exact answer to that question in terms of the rationale why this was instated. I can give you a couple pieces of background information. The Board of Teaching has been around for many, many years, actually going back to 1973, and this permission goes back just about 6 years, 2001. So it's a newer permission. The community expert did already exist at the time when this was enacted, and so I'm sorry that I don't have the exact rationale that was used at the time, but the community expert is open to any field or subject matter. It's not limited to a particular shortage area or subject matter area. So I can't give you the exact rationale, but we do believe that we've got other mechanisms in place.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it may have been in some circumstance where somebody had difficulty with the Board of Teaching and felt they needed a way around that. I think it would be helpful if we were going to consider this to know a little bit about the history of this if we were to consider accepting this.
Okay. And today it's just put a few concepts on the table. I saw that Ms. Allswager just arrived, and there may be input from Ed Minnesota on the subject as well.
Mr. Chairman, I'm not saying I necessarily oppose it, but I think it is helpful to understand so that sometimes we have to come back and have to redo what we undid, or but best just to do our homework before we make the action.
Further questions? Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want a clarification, please. You are using the term community expert or defining community expert in the same level or category of ESL teacher, and they are quite different. So could you expand on that? You're saying we already have that, so are you using them as kind of equitable kind of professionals? They don't do the same thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. I'm happy to clarify. We do have full licensure available for teachers of English as a second language and also bicultural, bilingual teachers. We do have those licenses in place, and in fact, it's the Board of Teaching's preference that all teachers who are in those classroom settings have that licensure. However, there are instances when a school district is not able to find someone with that appropriate licensure. So that's when they start looking to one of these special permissions. And so a community expert is a broad category that might be applied to English as a second language teacher. It could be used for a secondary math teacher. It could be used for a music teacher. It could be applied to any subject matter or content area, depending on the need of the school district. The community expert is just the title of the permission that is granted. In order to be granted a community expert permission from the Board of Teaching, the school district must demonstrate on their application that they have sought a fully licensed teacher, that they've advertised for the position, that they have not been able to find anyone that's fully licensed. They must also submit the resume of the person that they do wish to hire, so that the board is assured that they do have some expertise in that subject matter.
Just a
Senator Torres Ray.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that this exception was pursued because there are teachers who come from different countries who have licenses from their native countries who are able to do this. But these are professionals with extensive background, with extensive academic background, and have gone to universities, and some of them have PhDs. So they're not just community experts. These are people who are academically trained to become teachers, and so they have to go through the process of obtaining the license, and most of them actually do. But schools want to have, you know, kind of some flexibility to hire them before they complete their licensure requirements. Am I correct? That's what I've heard, so I don't know if that is. But I think what I'm misunderstanding is your presentation in terms of how you present teachers and community experts. They're just not the same thing. And the licensure is for actual teachers that have the background and the academic training to do the work, but they don't have the license. And I assume that the schools want them to pursue the license in the long term. They can't continue to do this without the licensing, I think.
Ms. Bowman.
Senator, yes, it is the board's desire that folks who do not, for a number of reasons, they come from out of state or out of the country or have a change in careers, but for people that come to teaching without a license and a district wishes to hire them, it is the board's desire that they would obtain full licensure. The requirements for the commissioner exemption that you see here in 124D.62 and the requirements for the community expert are very similar in terms of the fact that you need to have some expertise in the area that you'll be teaching, but don't need to have already that teaching license.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Further questions? Thank you, Ms. Bomer. And as I said earlier, we'll be revisiting this subject and probably in the form of a bill as well as other initiatives within the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Thank you.
And Superintendent Tyne, and I believe you're here on behalf of AMSD.
Yes, I am. Chair Rieger, members of the Senate committee, thank you for allowing me to testify today. I'm the superintendent of schools in Roseville, Minnesota, and it's been my great privilege to serve in that capacity. We've been served by a number of outstanding legislators over the years, and they've always told me the same thing. If there's anything we can ever do for you, please stop by and let us know. I'm here today to let you know I'm calling that chit in. I'm speaking in support of relief from some mandates that are now in place, and a couple of them already have been mentioned by the department. And I think we teach wonderful creative writing classes in our school district, but I don't think there are any compare to the superintendent's report that we are asked to submit each year. I heard Mr. Melcher speak of it earlier, and it's a report that's in place that really no longer serves a function. And we would hope that the Senate committee and the Senate bill would contain the removal of the superintendent's expenditure and passage rates. Also, there's some other forms and mandates that I'd like to address if possible.
Yes.
And that would be notice of the principles of general education revenue generated by school sites. There are a number of mandates that are out there that we're not really aware of where they go, the function that they serve, and the reason that we are asked to go through that process. We are working very hard to cut overhead to make sure that the time that we spent on administrative tasks is used in an appropriate and meaningful manner. And the bottom line is how is it going to affect the education of our students. And really, all of those reports, when we take a look at them, fail to address student learning. And it will allow us to focus additional revenue and additional resources in the classroom, which where we really believe they should be. I'd also like to just touch base on the reserve requirements. There are a number of reserve accounts that make the accounting system more confusing than it necessarily should be. And again, you heard the department speak in support of removing some of the reserve accounts that are no longer in place and no longer serve a purpose. So I'd hope that you'd consider our request to make life a little simpler, to make reporting to the public less confusing than it probably should be. So I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Superintendent, any suggestions on the testing results, reports that are made?
Well, the closer we can get and the easier we can make them for the public to understand, and the better off it is for all of us, for our kids and for our community. One of the things that really is very difficult to do is to go out into the public and try to explain why, when, how, where. And the simpler we can make it, the more compact we can make our reporting system, the better off we are. Thank you.
Thank you. And I know you've prepared a number of these suggestions, and they'll be introduced in a bill.
Yes.
Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Tyne, good to see you here. What in the reporting of student data is most difficult for parents to understand?
Well, when you take a look at the reporting systems that we have, the financial systems are almost impossible for the average person on the street to understand. And it makes it very confusing when we ask the public for additional support in the area of referendum. It's very confusing, and it sends a mixed message to our voters. So that would be my first stop.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I think Senator Bonhoeff was kind of led the charge for, along with a couple of other school districts, of using a different method of reporting that. Is that an improvement, or are you feeling that that still is not adequate to communicate effectively with the parents and the public?
Chair.
Superintendent Tynan.
Yes, I think it is a vast improvement, and the AMSD and the members of our committee have supported that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonhoeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Superintendent, I know you probably know this, but there have been some problems in the way that was implemented, and all of those people, including your somebody who, I don't know her position, but has worked on that, have brought it to my attention, and I have gone directly to the department, and so we are going to be having a meeting on the 20th to talk about some of the issues, and I'm hopeful we'll resolve it at a meeting rather than to have it bring it back.
Chair.
Yes, Superintendent?
Yes. Our Director of Finance, Barb Anderson.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much, Superintendent, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You.
Further questions? Thank you, and go next to the Minnesota School Boards Association.
Yes. Kirk. My name is Kirk Steinman. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I want to thank you, Senator, for bringing this issue up because, you know, we represent local school boards who absolutely love local control and don't like excessive mandates, and there's a big difference between the word may and must and from local school board perspective. And one of those issues that we look at closely this year, and is if you haven't noticed already, there's a little bill out there that talks about the issue of the school start date. And that's one of the issues that we would certainly like to have explored again to restore that authority to local school boards and making that decision on when they start school. It doesn't prevent schools from starting after Labor Day if they choose, but this is something that we think that would give boards authority to make that decision.
On that point, we will hear that February 21st, Senator Lynch's bill. And Senator Michelle has that in a bill as well. So February 21,
we'll look forward to seeing you
testimony.
Here.
Please continue.
Kirk.
Thank you, sir. Hear you.
Mr. Chair, a second one is an issue that doesn't often get reported, but it's an issue that deals with the developmental screening piece for school districts. Not a significant budget issue for school districts, but it's something that we feel has been underfunded. It's a requirement for school districts, and we understand the importance of identifying social, emotional, physical needs for students, but we also recognize that the dollar amount that's provided to school districts for this doesn't quite capture the cost that school districts have with interpreters and maybe some special needs students that may require more time. And this, in fact, the statute requests or encourages you to use volunteers as an effort, and many times, and it also encourages you to take money from your general fund to pay for that. So we think that that's an issue, and we also know that that's a bill out there that's looking at increasing the amount that school districts would receive on a per pupil basis for 3-, 4-, and 5-year-olds to help with that screening provision. And then another issue, and this is one that we've seen over a number of years, deals with the reserve requirement for staff development. School boards have long supported local discretion on this issue. The present law requires districts to set aside 2% of their general fund for staff development purposes, and then within that 2%, they have a breakdown for school building sites and local best practices and local grants as well. And so we would certainly encourage more or advocate for more discretion in this area. And if we don't have any discretion in terms of the 2%, we would certainly like to see the requirements of 50, 25, and 25% requirements be removed as well. And then this one will really surprise you is the contract deadline penalty. The January 15th deadline is a piece that our membership has long supported the removal. They have long argued and maintained that puts school boards in a very difficult position, knowing that there's a financial penalty on the backside of that if the settlement is not reached to by January 15th of an even year, then it penalizes the school board. And so we feel that would certainly level the playing field. And then I got two more, is the issue of special ed funding. And Senator, we know we've talked about this issue to a great extent, but it's an issue that in terms of funding, there's also requirements at the ground level for school districts in terms of human capital requirements, human labor requirements. And what this, we would certainly, if we're not going to provide additional funding for special ed, we need to explore some of the requirements that school districts have that are required for them and look at the alignment between the federal and state requirements. Is the state requiring more of our public school districts in Minnesota than the federal requirements? And that's something that certainly need to be explored. And then lastly, another bill that's going to be out there, and Senator Wieger, Chair Wieger's authoring this one, is the primary mandate for school districts in certain circumstances. We've seen districts that if you meet a certain threshold for candidates, then they are required to have a primary. And we've seen from around the state different costs for this. And I'm going to use Anoka-Hennepin as an example where they have election districts, and within one of those election districts, they met that threshold, and the election cost approximately $16,000 to $17,000 for that one to remove one candidate. So we would certainly advocate for more discretion at the local school district, local school board level to make that decision if they have a number of candidates out there who in a primary is warranted, then we should allow that local school board to make that decision. And then we know MASBO has a number of additional mandate relief pieces in their platform as well, and we would certainly support those as well. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Questions?
Very good.
Senator Henn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your testimony. I guess I have one question, and it goes back to a bill that was proposed last year, and I don't know if it's going to, but there was some thought that we ought to repeal the structural balance reporting. Is that something that your organization has taken a position on?
Should I win?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hand, it's an issue that we know that is out there. We don't have an official position on this, but I think that there is some discussion out there among members that it may not be meeting the needs or what the intent of what the original law was, and that may need to be reviewed. But we don't have an official position on that piece right now.
Superintendent Tai.
Chair. Senator, I do have some comments on that. And again, it gets back to the creative writing. One, we're trying to guess what our costs are going to be 2 years out on people that we're not sure who our employees are going to be. We're not sure the number of students that we're going to serve. We're not sure the type of and the amount of revenue that we're going to have because the legislature hasn't meant to set that number yet. So if there's a reason for it, and I thought there was a benefit for it, and that I could see that benefit, I think it would really be worthwhile doing. But right now, I think it's a process of going out and saying, what number do we have to be at, and working backward from that point on. Now, I'm not saying that the figures are completely false, but they are truly estimates and guesstimates on the part of administrators to fill out the structural balance form. And I honestly don't believe that there's a school board that once an agreement has been struck between the Minnesota Teachers Association or any bargaining group and the school board, that the school board's taken a look at it and said, boy, I don't think this structural balance is going to work out right. I really believe that the numbers that we see, if you can find one of those structural balance reports that state truly what really happened, I'd be very, very surprised. So I think it's exercise in futility.
Senator Hent.
And Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your comments. And I guess that's part of my question. I think there was an intention to try to create a mechanism to say, how can we assure the public that school boards aren't bargaining for expenses that would require increased revenues to sustain? How can we do that? And the current structure of the law may not be appropriate, may not be fulfilling that. And so part of my question is should we try to reform the law to make it do what some would say is something that should be done? Let's understand what kind of commitments we're making and can we sustain those without, you know, putting our district at SOD risk, for example, or other kinds of things. Or should we just say that the intent is not worth trying to accomplish and not worry about long-term consequences of contracts that are bargained for?
Chair.
Superintendent Tai.
I think you should always worry about long-term consequences. And I have two brothers that are in private business, and I always hear the mantra, why don't you guys run it more like a business? And the other thing they always tell me is there are entirely too many mandates passed down from the legislature. So I guess I'm carrying their banner right now today as a small brother of a small business owners. There are entirely too many mandates, and I don't know if it really serves the function, and I don't know if it meets the need that it's intended to do. I understand the need for the public to know, and I support that. And I think open and free government is the only way to go. More involvement is better than less, that's for sure. I just don't believe this structural format or this vehicle really answers that call. So in this case, from my point of view, less is more.
Thank you. And Ms. Allswager, if you'd like to join the panelists, there may be that opportunity for discussion amongst you as well, but if the panelists are welcome to rejoin us as need be. Welcome,
Ms. Mr. Allswager. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota. Anytime there's discussion about mandates, it actually brings a smile to my face, because what are mandates? Mandates are laws that you pass or previous legislatures pass. And so there's a reason why you have those mandates, or the state has a mandate, the school district has to follow them, or cities or counties or whomever is the recipient of that mandate. And you have made those decisions because you think that they were the right decisions, because the majority of the House and the Senate and the agreement with the governor, it all took place, and so you have a mandate. I think there's a difference between a mandate and an unfunded mandate. The unfunded mandates are those mandates that sometimes cause us problems because school districts are financially strapped to do the policy pieces that are put into law without the funding. But if you think about some of the mandates that you have passed, these are laws that were debated at length by legislators, by interest groups, lobbyists, you devote a full hearing on some of these mandates. So I encourage you to think very carefully when you hear the word mandate and not think it's frivolous, because mandates are laws or rules. And rules are, most rulemaking occurs as a result of legislative authority given to an agency. I think the chair is absolutely correct in that we're just trying to get something on the table and a discussion about mandates, but that before decisions are made about these, that they really do need a full hearing. The issues that you've heard, a number of them today, really warrant more thorough discussion, and I think the chair is right. Ms. Ballmer talked about the exemption from licensure requirements for limited English proficiency, changing it from the commissioner to the Board of Teaching. Generally, we would think that that's a good idea because we think the Board of Teaching should make those decisions. But again, I think that warrants a full hearing. Today we heard reference to the staff development requirements where the money is allocated 50% to the site, 25% to the district, and 25% for the district to send to the sites. Believe me, if that were just thrown out on the table as let's get rid of this mandate, there would be a huge discussion because the teachers in this state would and educators would not support that. So we thoroughly encourage the continued discussion of these laws. I would actually prefer to call them laws because they are laws. If you get into another category of unfunded mandates or maybe call them unfunded laws, that is another situation, such as special education and other programs such as that. January 15th is another one that is often referred to as a mandate, but it would be a huge discussion in the legislature. So the only reason I wanted to get up here was just to say that mandates are the laws or rules that you pass or give authority to pass. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Ms. Allswager, is there any report that's required that we should reconsider as to whether it should be repealed?
Mr. Chair, members, I think that the education organizations probably could come up with a number of them that are on the books that are unnecessary. I'm sure that is the case. At this point, I can't give you that list.
Okay. Senator Olson.
Well, just a general thought on some of these that have been proposed. If some of the mm-hmm. policies that might be considered a mandate, like the January 15th deadline, drive a local decision that involves expenditure of money. In turn, then, do you believe the legislature is obligated to fund what that local decision is? I know we've felt local control for the staff development is important. But somebody felt it was important enough to set it aside so that is not money that's necessarily available for bargaining. If we lift it and it's bargained away, then are we going to hear back and say, now we need money for staff development? There's everything, every action that we have has a consequence. And I think that's the balance that As we hear, many of the cuts that we have are there's local decisions that have been made with your organization, Ms. Olswager, that are beyond the resources that have been available from the state, and therefore then we're blamed for the quote cuts that have to be made. So there's a local decisions and there are state decisions, and which one is to preempt the other is I think the battle that we, and the struggle that we continually have here as we try to, optimize resources and yet want the results that we believe that our education system can and should deliver. So they're all wrapped up in many of these so-called mandates or requirements that some of our local folks chafe under and we struggle with as well.
Thank you. At the table, there's a report that shows all the reports that are going to be due. due to the legislature. There must be 100 or more. And does each member read those? Okay, that's good. And there's also a column. I believe it's required. They show how much it costs to prepare that. And, you know, as we review that, you know, keep that all in mind. And we are the ones that put that requirement in place. So as we look at limited resources, which is always the case, and how we can best use staff time, you know, through the agencies and in the school districts, we'll certainly be reviewing this. There's also recommendations from the school business officers, I believe the MASBO, and it has a number of suggestions here as well. I believe that Senator Carlson will have legislation addressing some of the items that were listed. Other subjects will be coming up. And as to which committee, some could go to Senator Stumps, some would be here. Some you may see in both committees, as you know, in an omnibus bill for policy or for finance. It's not uncommon to see a couple of different avenues. So that all remains to be determined in terms of vehicles. And as you're also aware, the highest priority now is to get the budget bill put together. Anyone in the audience like to weigh in on the subject of mandates, reports, rules, what might be eliminated, or comments on that subject in general? Okay. For the upcoming meetings, we do have the calendar, and we will start to act on some legislation. The next meeting, we'll have first a discussion about student safety, which is also a required report, but a very important report, especially if there's issues that may have happened in your district, and they do from time to time, and it sheds light on issues, and we'll have some legislation as well from Senator Moy, and Senator Bonoff will have some proposals we'll address. The site visits continue. I thank you, several of you that have been able to make those, and we realize there's multiple items on our calendars as well, but we have several upcoming visits as well. I can tell you we're getting a lot of great feedback from appreciative people in those districts, and for those of us that have been here, I know it's going to make an impact as we decide what we're going to do here in May. Senator Henn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on that note, I wanted just to publicly thank the chair and the committee for their fine work in supporting these field trips, and we were out in Eden Prairie on Monday, and I appreciated all the members who were able to be there, and I just want to thank the committee and the staff for the excellent work that they have done to facilitate this. I know it's a lot of work, but I think you're right. I found them to be very valuable, and I think that the information that we're learning will be of great help to us. So just thank you for being willing to do this.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
And Mr. Chair, I would I've really enjoyed these as many as I've been able to get to, and I'm appreciative that you'll be able to visit in my district on Monday, February 26th, and that you have allowed the regular committee time to be the time, which I hope that many of you will try to plan to attend. It will the value of it being scheduled at that time is that you should be able to get across St. Paul and Minneapolis before the rush hour, and instead of going through that stressful frustration for that part of it, and I think and also be able to get out there in daylight, so and enjoy the trip. So I hope to see you all there.
And what should we allow for drive time if it starts at 2:30 or 3?
3:30.
So should we leave here by 2:30?
That would be that's wise to give you a little time just in case you make a wrong turn. But it's an hour is a max that it would take, maybe a little less.
Okay.
Especially if you don't get into a traffic jam.
And members, another item: the QComp report. You should have had distributed the memo from Commissioner Segrin and had some information on Leroy Ostrander, as well as some additional background on that. And if you have questions, I ask that you please forward it to myself or to the commissioner's office or staff as they will be responsive on that. And I believe I had mentioned, too, Deputy Commissioner Chaz Anderson is working with various people, sort of a subgroup, just to talk about what can be done to fix No Child Left Behind at the federal level, to develop some strategies in a bipartisan way with an appeal for flexibility. And we had asked that we have those recommendations by March 1st, and I believe she does have a meeting coming up next week, and some of those suggestions will be shared, obviously, with us. It's our hope that we'll be able to very actively get involved in influencing policy at the federal level, and also that Governor Pawlenty, through his work as the chair of the Governor's Conference, can use that August position to influence policy. We've had a lot of testimony, a lot of frustration expressed about the need for change in the federal law, and it's our opportunity to make an impact. We've heard it in our hearings at the local level, at the state, and across America, and we're not going to give up on that. So I wanted you to know that there's persons that are working on that, and we'll look forward to those suggestions. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I just also want to thank you for doing this calendar and updating. I think it's very, very helpful for planning to know when we will or won't be meeting and what these options are. It's kind of unique. So,
we thank staff.
I just want to commend you for that.
And as you know, these items do change sometimes, but we will try to update it as soon as there is a change. And that's also for the audience as well and for the general public, and we put that electronically so you're aware of things. And you'll note on here as well, new math standards, we'll be discussing that March 5, very important. There's a lot of discussion, too, in terms of whether we look at additional standard requirements and curriculum, and that will be factored in here as well. Charter schools, there are bills that are being developed on that. We'll hear that on March 7. Literacy legislation will be discussed on March 12. Student testing and reporting, we'll probably have some legislation on that on the 14th, and also some other topics that you have expressed interest on. And if there's a particular item that you don't see on here and you have a bill, for example, that is being developed, please let me know on that as well. I said earlier that some of these items, as in the past and future, would also go to Senator Stump's committee, especially if there's going to be funds. And so we want to hear, and in some cases they are going right to that committee, but there will also be policy implications that we would want to attach to that. Some of us have the advantage where, in fact, I think about half of us are on that E12 Finance Committee so that we can share that. But if you see something that is in the Finance Committee with the policy recommendation, please let us know, or please let me know. And Senator Bonoff is the vice chair of that committee, and Senator Olson, I believe you're the ranking member on that. Senator Hahn is ranking member for this committee. We want to make sure we are as inclusive as we can. So that's where things are at this point. And Senator Michelle.
Mr. Chair, I apologize if I just missed this, but do you have any, have you been given any committee deadlines or other kind of timetables to operate on yet as a policy committee or as a member of a budget division?
No.
Any but, conjecture?
Budget, well, no. We want to have the budget done, passed on the floor by Easter, before Easter. And that is the priority.
Sure, you have a good memory of what's been said.
Yes. Okay, Senator Olsen.
I just heard this morning that United States Senator Klobuchar will be in my district on the 22nd. Unfortunately, it's going to be right when we're on our floor, so I will be here instead of up there. But I've let the people know that are kind of conducting the meetings with her that No Child Left Behind is one of our top concerns. And also the special ed cross-subsidy is killing our school district. So I'm hoping that that message will be conveyed to her. And maybe if we get our letters done real fast, I could just hand them to her. Or
you can do that, but we will be following up in even a more aggressive manner as well. So,
following up on that, can we just send a letter from the committee maybe instead of going through the whole process of the Senate? I mean, by the time we get that letter through the floor, it's going to be...
Senator Olsen, members, there's some discussion as to what is the impact of a resolution, but for example, on special ed, that will be heard by Rules Committee, and I would anticipate would go to the floor soon, and as well as No Child Left Behind. But we're waiting for that recommendation. We could send a letter, but I think the plan would be that we wait until we act on it. And I had mentioned, too, about Chaz Anderson and developing some recommendations on No Child Left Behind with others, and then ultimately what we in a bipartisan way can endorse. So that would be the timeline. It's going to be several months before Congress ultimately takes action, and so I think time-wise we're okay. Happy Valentine's Day to everyone, and this meeting's adjourned.
That's right.
That's right.
That's the most testing.
They want to stop the flowers.